Srimad-Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 1, Questions by the Sages, Text 3. Nigama-kalpa-tura-galitam-halam Shukamukara-mritya-dravya-samyutam Pibata-bhagavatam-rasamalayam Mola Rasika Bhuvi Bhavuka Nigama, the Vedic literatures. Kalpataro, the desire tree. Galitam, fully matured. Palam, fruit. Sukha, Sila Sukadeva Goswami. The original speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. Mukat, from the lips of. Amrita, nectar. Drava, semi-solid and soft. And therefore easily swallowable. Samyutam, perfect in all respects. Pibata, do relish it. Bhagavatam, the book dealing in the science of the eternal relation with the Lord. Rasam, juice, that which is relishable. Alayam, until liberation, or even in a liberated condition. Muhu, always. Aho, Rasika, those who are full in the knowledge of bellows. Bhuvi, on the earth. Bhavuka, expert and thoughtful. Translation. Oh, expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of the Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Purport. Well, that's a very long purport. I will read part of it. In the previous two slokas, it has been definitely proved that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the sublime literature which surpasses all other Vedic scriptures due to its transcendental qualities. It is transcendental to all mundane activities and mundane knowledge. In this sloka, it is stated that the Srimad Bhagavatam is not only a superior literature, but is the ripened fruit of all Vedic literatures. In other words, it is the cream of all Vedic knowledge. Considering all this, patient and submissive hearing is definitely essential. With great respect and attention, one should receive the message and lessons imparted by the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Vedas are compared to the desire tree because they contain all things knowable by man. They deal with mundane necessities as well as spiritual realization. The Vedas contain regulated principles of knowledge covering social, political, religious, economic, military, medicinal, chemical, physical, metaphysical subject matter, and all that may be necessary to keep the body and soul together. Above and beyond this are specific directions for spiritual realization. Regulated knowledge involves a gradual rising of the living entity to the spiritual platform. And this highest spiritual realization is knowledge that the personality of Godhead is the reservoir of all spiritual tastes or rasas. Every living entity, beginning from Brahma, the firstborn living being within the material world, down to the insignificant ant, desires to relish some sort of taste derived from sense perceptions. These sensual pleasures are technically called rasas. Such rasas are of different varieties. In the revealed scriptures, the following 12 varieties of rasas are enumerated. Rodra, anger, abruta, wonder, shingar, conjugal love, hasya, comedy, vira, chivalry, daya, mercy, dasya, servitorship, sakya, fraternity, bayanaka, horror, bibhatsa, shock, santa, neutrality, vatsalya, parentahood. The sum total of all these rasas is called affection or love. Primarily, such signs of love are manifested in adoration, service, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. And when these five are absent, love is present indirectly in anger, wonder, comedy, chivalry, fear, shock, and so on. For example, when a man is in love with a woman, the rasa is called conjugal love. But when such love affairs are disturbed, there may be wonder, anger, shock, and even horror. Sometimes love affairs between two persons culminate in ghastly murder scenes. Such rasas are displayed between man and man and between animal and animal. There's no possibility of an exchange or rasa between a man and an animal, or between a man and any other species of living beings within the material world. The rasas are exchanged between members of the same species. But as far as the spirit souls are concerned, they are one qualitatively with the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the rasas were originally exchanged between the spiritual living being and the spiritual whole, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual exchange, or rasa, is fully exhibited in spiritual existence between living beings and the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is therefore described in the Shruti mantras, Vedic hymns, as the fountainhead of all rasas. When one associates with the Supreme Lord and exchanges one's constitutional rasa with the Lord, then the living being is actually happy. Om Gyane Chimadandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurvanitam Veda Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivasri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. We have heard that every living entity within the material world, from the top, Lord Brahma, down to the most insignificant ant, desires tastes, and these tastes are acquired through sense perceptions. Can you see yourself pursuing these tastes? First, perceive yourself hungry for tastes. That's why you enter into relationships of all sorts of types, because you want to relish the flavors of those relationships. So once you can understand this psychology of rasa, it's very important. Then you can start to sort yourself out. What's going on? What are you hankering for? What are you missing? What's the hole in your heart? Therefore, it's because you feel you're not getting certain tastes in personal relationships. All of sentient experience has taste. All of conscious experience, all the experience by conscious living entities has taste to it. Now let us consider the taste of material life. It definitely has a particular flavor which you are pursuing. The science of rasa teaches us that the flavors in material existence are perverted. They have a semblance, a little bit of reality, because these tastes in material existence are based on the full, pure tastes of the spiritual world. When it comes to rasa, or a particular flavor, whether it's fraternity, or parenthood, or conjugal love, or anger, wonder, comedy, these flavors are experienced in full only in relationship with Krishna. So if you cut Krishna out of the picture, you just diluted all your flavors. It's like when you make some fresh fruit juice. You may have maybe one cup of fresh orange juice, but then you add 5 liters of water. What do you have? So that is material existence. We are longing for the fullness of the rasas, the flavors, but that can only happen in relation to Krishna. And we have forgotten Krishna. We are dedicated to imitating Krishna. Krishna is rasovaisa. He's the source of all flavors, of all rasa. And we want to imitate that. And just see what our experience is when we're imitating. We get such diluted flavors. In fact, the Shastra calls them perverted flavors. No one likes to think of themselves as a pervert. But just think, as long as you're dedicated to the perverted flavors of material existence, then what can be our classification? And those flavors of material existence require us to work so hard. Work doesn't simply mean a job. It means struggling. Everything is a struggle in material existence. You may be very wealthy, and you don't have to struggle at work, but you still struggle in your relationships. So work means struggling to attain a particular flavor, whether you're working a job or working a relationship of various types. Once we understand the psychology of what's going on with our life, we can start to fix ourselves. What are you doing and why are you doing it? You are pursuing flavor. Just like when you eat, if there's a good cook, you're hoping that there'll be different flavors. Yes, the masala should be right, and so many things. You want flavor. You want, when you eat, to experience the different taste buds in your mouth being stimulated. That's always a good meal. Similarly, when you bite into material existence, you want to feel certain, you want to taste certain flavors. So what the Shastra is pointing out to us is that the flavors of material existence are so deficient. They're actually stale. You ever tried to eat stale bread? Stale chapatis or rotis? Not very palatable at all. You'd think you would only do that if you were in prison and that's all they gave you. To think that material existence is stale. Really? Can you believe it? It seems to promise so much, doesn't it? Freshness, full flavor, stimulating flavor, fascinating flavors, right? So then why does the Shastra say it's stale? We need to know what to compare material existence with. Otherwise, we'll feel a little resentful about all these put-downs of material flavors. We need to understand the flavors of the spiritual world. And then we'll be able to make a proper comparison. You can compare. As you begin the bhakti process, You start to become introduced to the flavors of the spiritual world. And therefore, you can gradually relinquish your grip on the flavors of material existence. This Bhagavatam is a flavorful experience. Therefore, you're being urged. All those who are expert and thoughtful, relish Srimad Bhagavatam. This fruit has become even more tasteful. Although its nectarian juice was already relishable, it's become even more flavorable as it's recited by the devotees of Krishna. In other words, the flavor of Bhagavatam is not stable or only at one level. It's constantly increasing in flavor the more that devotees recite Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the nature of the spiritual experience, the genuine spiritual experience. It is said about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Rup, Sanatan, Rathanath, and so forth, that they are always endeavoring to expand the ocean of Ananda, transcendental bliss. That means they're always increasing the ocean of flavors, the Rasamrita Sindhu. This is the kind of persons who are in Parampara from Krishna. Their endeavor, their duty of love, their joy is to expand constantly the ocean of rasa. They're taking something that's already overwhelmingly nectarian, and they're making it even more relishable. This is the best kind of employment, the best kind of job. Bhagavatam introduces you to Krishna. Krishna is eternally a teenager. Remember when you were a teenager? At first you were very hopeful, generally, that so many flavors would be accessible to you. No longer were you a little child. Now you are a teenager. The whole world of flavors is opening up to you. Of course, you are soon to be disappointed. And you are soon to realize you have to work very hard. Or prepare to work very hard. Study hard in order to work hard in order to get those flavors. Krishna never works. He's always playing his flute. And his form, Kaishorupa, is always of a young teenager. Now, how is it that Krishna has childhood form and little boy form? Kumar and Poganda. How is it? If he's eternally a young man, teenager, then how are these other forms possible? They are contained within Krishna's eternal form as a teenager. And he manifests those babyhood forms, those little boy forms, for the pleasure of his devotees. In fact, Krishna does not display his childhood pastimes in the spiritual world. He only displays them as he travels from material universe to material universe. So they are very special. In the spiritual world, Krishna doesn't display childhood pastimes, and he doesn't kill demons. Krishna is eternally the youthful boy. That's the best for sporting. The best is young romance. So Krishna knows, as the supreme enjoyer, he knows what is the best enjoying experience. He surrounds himself in Vrindavan with so many flavorful tastes. When we talk about Vrindavan, we talk about an ocean of tastes as Krishna experiences them through his pastimes, his leelas. He wants to take care of the cows. Mother Yashoda, she doesn't want. Why is my little boy trying to do this work of taking care of the calves? We have so many employees. We have so many men who can do this job. Why does Krishna want to do it? But Krishna, that's his eternal activity, taking care of cows. So he insists to his mother. He acknowledges her concern and affection, but he says, anyway, mother, I'm still going to do it. I'm going to take care of the calves. So she relents. Of course, when he first goes out to the forest to bring all the calves with him, with his cowherd boys, with Balaram, Mother Yashoda wants to follow behind. Krishna has to send her back. Please, please. Because he's going out to the forest for sakyaras, the flavors of friendship. So therefore, a mother should stay behind with her parental affection, her vatsalya prem. Other mornings, Krishna announces, mother, I'm going to take breakfast in the forest. I'm going to eat in the forest. At first, Yashoda Mai says, no, you're meant to eat at home. She wants the pleasure of eating Krishna at home. But Krishna insists, mother, I appreciate what you're saying, but I am going to have a picnic. That's the way it is. When Krishna wants to do something, it happens. Whether it's worshipping Govardhan Hill, or having a picnic in the forest instead of eating at home. So Mother Yashoda agrees, all right. And then she just makes heaps and heaps of the most palatable preparations. These preparations are so palatable, it's described that the demigods, when they look at these preparations, their eyes bulge. So she packs all these preparations into various bags, and the cowherd boys tie the bags to sticks they carry over their shoulders, and they all march into the forest. So although Krishna is eternally Nanda Kishore, he's the teenage son of Nanda Maharaj, nevertheless, he has his childhood form. He has his little boy form within him, because there are devotees who want to relish loving exchanges with those forms. When we consider the flavors of material existence, we should not become overwhelmed by our imperfect sense perception, which will tell us, oh, these flavors look good, these flavors look like what I'm missing. I've been living as a good devotee practitioner for a few years now. It's time to get back to some flavors. It is our mistake to think that what we see is what is. We are being blinded by an illusory presentation. That's humiliating to think about. That illusory presentation makes the flavors of material existence look so essential and fulfilling. Now, if we consider the flavors of material existence from the viewpoint of Shastra, we get another understanding. So then we have to constantly check ourselves. Which perception is right? Is it what I see, or is it what the Shastra sees? So this constant checking ourselves is not a, what do you call it? It's not exhausting. Oh, why do I always have to check back and forth? I see this, but Bhagavatam says that. I see good flavors in material existence, but Bhagavatam says no. Constantly I have to keep checking myself. No, even though I see this, Bhagavatam says that. We think that this is an exhausting, burdensome process. Constantly check yourself. In other words, wouldn't it seem natural that we see some opportunity for pleasure and you just get into it? Then there would be relief, right? Not this constant checking. Oh, I perceive this, but I have imperfect senses. The Bhagavatam says that. It seems like we should get tired of this, yes? We want to be spontaneous. You read Nectar Devotion and you find out that there is spontaneous love, but it's on the pure spiritual platform. In other words, let us face the point that we are in the convalescent stage. It's hard getting a hospital patient to admit that he or she is simply convalescing, simply trying to get well again. If you've ever been seriously sick and then you slowly start to recuperate, you immediately want to do so many things. Bring me pizza loaded up with cheese. Bring me Club Jimmins. The doctor says, wait. Your taste buds are not fully ready yet. Your health will not allow you to digest these things. I feel okay. What do you mean I feel okay? I have to have these things. I just want to eat without restriction. And then I'll feel like I have a real life. So many restrictions. You can't eat this. You can't eat that. You have to eat at this time and not at that time. I'm tired of all that. Maybe you can remember when you were very sick. You just got tired of all those regulations and all those restrictions. So sometimes we're like that in our spiritually developing phase. We forget that we are convalescents. We are trying to regain our health so that we can be genuinely spontaneous. If you try to be spontaneous in your stage when you're not fully well, it will be a disaster. So yes, there is a platform of existence that is spontaneous, but we have to prepare for that. So often I find that devotees really need to think about which phase that they're in. This is the time to work on ourselves, to get our health back, and then you can be spontaneous. We are recovering from a holocaust in which we were searching for material flavors. If we take it from Pallad Maharaj, what does he say? Punas charvananam. The material flavors are so hackneyed, so stale. They've been chewed over and over again. There's no juice left in them. But we are determined to prove Pallad Maharaj wrong. Ah, there is flavor there. I'll show you. Srimad Bhagavatam will introduce us to the world of spiritual flavors. And the more that Bhagavatam is spoken, the more the flavor increases. This is something we need to experience. Just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated, the more that the Panchatattva dance, the more that the ocean of love of Godhead increases. The more that the Panchatattva plunders the storehouse of love of God, the more the supply in the storehouse increases. That is no material experience. What kind of warehouse do you know that if you break into it as a thief and steal everything, you come back the next day and there's even more there? You come home from work in the evening, and you just cook everything in the, that's stored in all the cabinets in the kitchen. You just cook all the boga. I don't care about tomorrow. And you wake up the next morning, go into the kitchen, and all the cupboards are full. So, that is the spiritual experience. That is genuine spiritual life, as opposed to simply religious belief. It is the motivation that provides that sweet flavor we're hearing about in Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam does not present materially motivated religion. Therefore, the juice is so sweet and ever increasing in its sweetness. So in this way, we can understand the practical aspects of motivation. According to your motivation, you'll taste certain flavors. The Bhagavatam's flavor is super excellent because there's no material motivation involved. As soon as there's material motivation for yourself to get something for you, the flavor is ruined. So again, if we can understand that we are pursuing rasa in everything we do, we want to experience these different emotional flavors. Comedy, romance, wonder, even horror. That's why people pay money to see horror movies. They want to taste a certain flavor. But these flavors are only available in fullness in terms of relationship with Krishna. Where else would you get such knowledge? We are exhorted to go on relishing Srimad Bhagavatam. That means we need a lifestyle that allows us to relish Srimad Bhagavatam. So much about bhakti concerns lifestyle management. And we're not always very cooperative about this. Either we're directly rebellious or we're very politely and piously rebellious. But in so many ways we say, Krishna, I'll take care of myself. I'll arrange for myself. We may do it very arrogantly, or we may do it very piously, offering pranams. But the bottom line is the same. We don't want Krishna infiltrating our lifestyle too much. Because we feel that our lifestyle is our kingdom for flavors of our own arrangement. Krishna wants to give you infinitely better flavors. Oh, when will we get that into our head? We're so insecure. Oh, I might miss out if I give up the material flavors. Oh, no. Lifestyle management in bhakti involves a constant readjustment to make sure you're positioned properly to get the spiritual flavors. The Krishna Bhakta is always alert. It's like when you're driving a car. Sometimes you go too far this way, sometimes too far to that side of the road. So the alert driver is always got his hands on the wheel, adjusting. That's driving. How many of you get angry when you're driving? I have to keep adjusting. What is this? Anyone get angry because of that? No, you accept that's the way it is in driving. So why should we get angry that in bhakti we're constantly adjusting and readjusting our lifestyle? This is the way of love, sensitivity to the beloved. This kind of pure motivation is what Bhagavatam gives us, that will always be motivated to adjust because of giving pleasure to Krishna. All of Vrindavan is like that. They just adjust for Krishna's pleasure. Mother Yasoda thinks, why does my boy go to other people's houses and steal milk products? What's wrong with what we have in our own home? I will make him such sweets that he'll never go anywhere else. So she's adjusting. Krishna wants to go have a picnic in the forest. She says no. Then she adjusts. Krishna wants to take care of the calves. She says no. But then she adjusts. And Yogamaya is making adjusting arrangements all the time so that the residents of Vrindavan don't think about Krishna's opulence. Yogamaya hides Krishna's opulence as well as prevents the Vrijvasis from detecting it too much. And Yogamaya is making arrangements for Krishna's pastimes. Everything is always adjusted for Krishna's pleasure. That is reality. All right. Any questions? Yes.
Have you ever heard that Krishna doesn't display his charity for when his fruits work? So what's the position of Mother Yasoda in his fruits work?
Oh, well, she doesn't need that Krishna has to be in a baby form in order to love Krishna as her child. The same rasa is there fully. But his childhood pastimes are displayed in the material world. Mother Yashoda is also there. But he does his pastimes in the material world. Remember, after Krishna, and after he killed Kamsa in Mathura, and he and Balaram came before Vasudeva and Devaki. Even though Krishna was a young man at that time, still, after Krishna properly aroused in them some parental feelings, so they would forget their own reverence, you know, they put Krishna on their lap and began to cry. And Krishna would stimulate those feelings. Oh, mother, oh, father, forgive me. I could not discharge my duty to my parents. There are no demons in the spiritual world. So what's Krishna going to do? In Goloka Vrindavan, they're simply rumors of demons. There are no demons there. So for Krishna to fight with demons, he has his Boma Leela, his earthly Leela. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, we heard that Krishna appeared in the 28th yuga cycle of the 7th moon, which is the present moon. So this Bhagavatam was recited when Parikshit was caused. So does that mean that Bhagavatam is only recited once in Brahma's days?
Bhagavatam is eternal. As you read here, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Bhagavatam is like an accordion. it can be expanded or concise. What's Lord Brahma's version of Bhagavatam? 4 verses. In those 4 verses, the whole Bhagavatam is there. But for us, the Bhagavatam is expanded into approximately 18,000 verses, depending on how you divide the verses. Say approximately 18,000. So it's the same absolute truth, just like it's the same accordion, whether it's expanded or compressed. So at different times, at different places, the accordion expands or compresses. Brahma gets it very compressed. He can see, in those 4 verses, he sees everything. In other words, Bhagavatam did not, it's not that Bhagavatam came into existence when Vyasadeva compiled it. Now, Bhagavatam is eternal, but Vyasadeva puts it into a certain form. There's a difference between Shruti and Smriti. Like the Rig Veda, Atharva Veda, every syllable is the same. So the Brahmanas learn Rig Veda, for example, backwards and forwards. And that way the accuracy of the sound vibration is preserved. It's the most astonishing system. Those Vedas are for yajna, they're for sacrifices, therefore the sound vibration has to be precise. But Bhagavatam's not like that. Bhagavatam is about motivation. Motivation is also information. Precise motivation leads to precise experience. So it is not that every syllable has to be the same in Bhagavatam for countless creations and annihilations of the universe. No, it's the motivation. The general kernel is there. Right in the beginning, you are told it's the pure motivation, the pure love that makes Bhagavatam unique. Not the some kind of very, you might say, fanatical preservation of syllables. This is a different kind of reality, a reality that is created by motivation. Therefore, we heard, completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. And so forth. That sweeping out of any material motivations gives you the highest information, the highest experience. So that's a different way to look at the situation. Okay? Anything else? Yes? The more you increase the spiritual side of your life, the more you'll decrease the material flavors. Very simple. You try to please Krishna's devotee, and Krishna will be pleased with you more than if you try to please Krishna directly. Pleasing Krishna directly won't work. You try to please Krishna's devotee. And then the spiritual flavors increase. That is also stated in the beginning of Bhagavatam. Vasudeva Kata Ruchi San Mahat Sevayavipra. By rendering service to the devotee, you get the ruchi, the taste for Vasudeva Kata, for talks about Krishna. Anything else? Yes. Original in that, in the course of this discussion, in the context of Prichit and Shukadeva, but Brahma also heard Bhagavatam. This Bhagavatam is drawing you into the context of Prichit and Shukadeva, and then Sutta Goswami and the sages at Naimisaranya. So that's the scene. The Bhagavatam's eternal. As I was explaining to his question, it's not that every rendition of Bhagavatam is like a concert. It's not that every concert is exactly the same. So this concert, you're hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami, so on and so forth. In other words, what today's verse is letting you know is that there is individuality on the highest spiritual platform. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Another example. Everyone loves the Damodarastic prayers, right? Namamishwaram Sachinanandarupam Lasakutanam Gokule Vrajaman. When Kartik comes, everyone loves chanting those prayers. Those prayers are attributed to Sri Satyavrata Muni. But actually, they are an eternal prayer that manifests through his mouth. These realities don't conform to material calculation. The simile, Bhagavatam is eternal. And in this situation, it's manifested from the lips of Shukadeva Goswami. So we're focusing on that particular concert. But the music is eternal. And Shukadeva Goswami has added his personal realizations, like the parrot, when it pecks the fruit becomes even sweeter. So therefore we give Shukadeva Goswami credit. Thank you for adding your individuality. In this way we can understand that spiritual life is not stereotyped, it's not rigid. There's room for full individual development on the pure platform, but not in the convalescent stage. Last question. Yes.
As you go ahead, it is mentioned that even Sanat Kumar traveled to the waters of the Ganges and came to hear the Bhagavatam from the mouth of Sankarshan. Mm-hmm. So, like every time Bhagavatam has been spoken, there was a purpose. Like Parikshit Maharaj was going to leave his body, so Sukadeva Goswami spoke of Vyasa. They was responded, so Narad Muni told him. So that time, what was the purpose? Like, why did Sanat Kumar travel all the way down?
Because what else is there to life other than hearing Srimad Bhagavatam? The purpose is to associate with Krishna. That's why Lord Chaitanya said, before you are liberated, hear Srimad Bhagavatam. After you are liberated, go on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. It's just the way it is. Whether Bhagavatam is in this situation or that situation, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, eternally. We're trying to catch up with Bhagavatam and serve Bhagavatam. The motivation, think motivation. In today's degraded society, motivation is not very important. People just say, I don't care what your motivation is, just let's look at the outcomes. But bhakti, the bhakti science recognizes the motivation is most important. Motivation changes the outcomes. In material life, never mind what you feel or what you think, just let's look at what the outcome is. Very results oriented. That's why people can't understand Bhagavad Gita even. How do you act without attachment to the results? Expect it. That must mean that you just, whatever, I'll just do it, I'll act, and I'll not be careful because, you're not supposed to be attached to results. That means you don't concentrate on what you're doing. So many times we hear this point. How can you do something without being attached to the results? The only way you can be like that is just, whatever, do it. You do the activity very casually. I don't care. So this is material civilization. As soon as something is for me, be very careful. In fact, often I have to, in brahmachari ashrams, I have to be very strict reminding the brahmacharis that just because nothing belongs to you and everything belongs to Krishna, that's not an invitation to be inattentive. Well, this is not my car, it's not my Sankirtan van we're driving, so. No, it's time to be even more careful because everything belongs to Krishna. You have that lifestyle to recognize everything belongs to Krishna. It's a personal thing. Therefore, often it's said, sometimes householders say, when the brahmacharis marry, then they'll be more attentive because they'll have to work to get things and they'll be very careful then. You work to get the car. You work to get the flat. You work to get the furniture. And often it's true that many men, they can't really properly develop in the brahmacharya ashram because they need a sense of ownership. They need a sense of proprietorship. And that's not there in the brahmacharya ashram. Of course, obviously, those kind of devotees don't belong in the brahmacharya ashram in the first place, it could be said. But in any case, the point is, once we actually accept that everything belongs to Krishna, we become very attentive. We don't like go to sleep on the job. It's all Krishna. As Prabhupada said, it's not that Krishna told Arjuna, all right, I'll drive the chariot, you just stay in the back and go to sleep. You're just the instrument. Victory or defeat's not your concern. Arjuna could have said like that. Victory or defeat's not my concern? Great, I'll just sleep in the back of the chariot. So how is it that even though you're not attached to the results, you still put your all in all into an activity? People can't understand that. Even our own devotees don't understand it. So therefore, sometimes you see that things are spaced out. Yeah. Neophyte devotees consider that when things are spaced out, that means they've been acting without attachment. Krishna said, don't be attached to the results. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Mm-hmm.